Welcome, everybody. This is All About Symbian Insight number 225, recording this on Monday, the 8th of October, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield for allaboutsymbian.com. With me up in hell, I have David Gilson.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Rev. And hello to everybody that's listening. We've got a few things to talk about today, haven't we?
Just teasing our show notes there. Also, Rafe Blandford, down in Sussex.
Hello, everybody. Yes, busy news week in the Symbian world.
Well, yes, a confusing week in the Symbian world, with updates coming and going and being available and then not being available in terms of Bell refresh and home screen widgets, but we'll come to all that in a moment, won't we, David? First of all, Bell Feature Pack 2, or Symbian Bell Feature Pack 2, depending on how you look at it, it appeared for the Nokia 808 and indeed for the Nokia 701 about a week ago for 4 or 5 hours, and then it went down again, presumably pulled because some people have problems with the installation or a few of the ports of brick devices, but it went okay for me. I updated over the air, although you can, of course, update through Nokia Suite. It gives you swipe to unlock shade effect for the lock screen and brand new multi-touch keyboard, or possibly more later, a new version of web, voice search in Maps, you get a new email widget, and various other widgets, a refreshed music player, transparent toolbars throughout the UI, which look really, really slick. Search icon on the home screen toolbar. Gallery changes for the Nokia 808. So it now works in landscape and you can multiple tag images, which is something they literally did not have time to code in for the first version of the firmware. So major, major improvement. I guess I'm glad I updated quickly, Rafe, and you kind of missed the boat on your 808.
I did indeed. I mean, I updated successfully on the 701 and wrote the story on that, and the list of updates is very similar to the 808. It's slightly different base it's starting from, obviously. For example, the DLNA app that's in the 808 wasn't in the 701, so you get that along with a few other extra bits and pieces. But yes, I think this update probably got pulled because there are a few problems with it rolling out, and we've seen various reports of that. It was painless for us, and we haven't spotted any major bugs in the actual, you know, the new version. But it's a bit of a shame. I mean, this is just one more chapter in the story about, you know, not getting updates quite right, not delivering them fast enough. And you sort of feel, you know, as this is probably going to be one of the last major updates for Symbian, it wouldn't feel right if something didn't go slightly wrong with it. But nevertheless, it has arrived for at least some people, and I don't suppose it'll be too long before it's widely available. It's probably worth saying that our limited resources are now available internally within Nokia working on Symbian. Of course, it's been mostly farmed out to Accenture, but even they have limited time and resources spent on it as well. I mean, a lot of this has been developed for a long time, but it takes a while to take it out of the code and sort of push it out into products. I mean, I saw prototypes of some bits of this, anything up to a year ago. And I would describe it generally, Bell Feature Pack 2, as kind of a polishing of the original Bell, and more so than Bell Feature Pack 1 was. You know, there's some refinements to the look and feel of the UI, for example, and the keyboard is probably the biggest deal for me in terms of the update. It really does improve text input substantially on all of these devices.
Can I put my rant in here, Ray?
You can indeed, yes.
When you're typing away on the new multi-touch keyboard and you're rattling away at high speed and you put in a common misspelling of a word, you get the wrong, for example, or and, or something really obvious. On every other smartphone in the known universe these days, it auto-corrects it to the or and or whatever the word is. On this multi-touch keyboard, it shows you a list of possible corrections, but it doesn't actually auto-insert it for you. And there is no setting whatsoever in the UI yet that lets you change that behavior. Is this something they might add?
It's possible, I suppose, but I probably wouldn't hold my breath on this particular one. You know, autocorrect, as you say, is a very popular feature. Indeed, it's, you know, featured on the Symbian keyboards in the past quite heavily, and it's something I've always switched on, even if it's often been switched off by default. I will say that the keyboard is still worth upgrading to because it is so much better. I mean, it's not just it's multi-touch, and that means, you know, you can press multiple letters at the same time and they'll all register, but also the actual arrangement of the keyboard, it's now staggered, and that tends to make text input more accurate. So overall, I found I'm a lot more accurate on the Bell keyboard, so there's less need to go back and correct things. And actually, the correction method isn't too bad in itself, because, you know, you tap on a word and then you've got this list of suggestions at the top, and you can scroll through them left to right, and there may be 10 of them depending on the word. Usually it's in the first couple. You just tap on the word, and so it's very quick to go back and edit things. Yes, ultimately, I guess I prefer auto correction. Of course, that can be tricky to get right sometimes. You know, at what level do you set the percentage of when you start doing corrections, and you know, I think everyone's aware of there's various blogs around featuring funny auto corrects both for the iPhone and Android devices. So I guess maybe they made a decision to keep things simple, especially if they had, you know, a lack of resources to kind of fine tune that absolutely. But yes, it's a little frustrating to find that. I mean, another example of this is there is still an alphanumeric keyboard, and actually that's been redesigned as well. But you switch between the two. You have to go into settings, then phone, then language, then click on the language, and then choose one or the other. You can't switch from the keyboard as you previously did. Because I know some people used alphanumeric in portrait and QWERTY in landscape mode. You'll now have to make the choice of one or the other, which kind of is a bit frustrating. It feels to me like you could fit something on the keyboard to, you know, switch between the two, because actually if you have more than one language activated for the keyboard, you can actually switch between the languages on the keyboard, and you'll get obviously the different layouts and the accents. So why you couldn't have incorporated alphanumeric maybe into that menu as well, I don't know, but I guess we'll always find something to complain about with these updates.
Yeah, talking of things to complain about, also confusing, I found, was that the original Symbian generation devices, that's the N80, 7C, 7, etc., that had already been gone through Symbian 3, Symbian Anna, Symbian Bell, so I guess we should be glad they're getting updates at all. But some of them got Bell Refresh with a whole bunch of widgets and a few extra application enhancements, which we've reported on the various stories on the site. And others, a whole, probably more than half, Rafe, more than half the product codes of all this first generation of modern Symbian devices, they merely got pushed a, quote, home screen widgets update. I guess we can go to David first. And David, perhaps you could just share a light on what exactly you get in this update and any details, and then we'll go to Rafe for comment on why it's perhaps not more widely available, and also why these devices didn't actually go to Bell Refresh in full.
Yeah, sure. It's a little difficult. You have to give a very vague, fuzzy outline as to what actually happened here, because everybody is still scratching their heads. I think even people in Nokia are, because we asked. What you will definitely get if you are offered this update is the following seven widgets. You'll get a calendar agenda widget, which is what we were waiting for ever since Bell got going, or at least I was, which gives you a scrolling widget of everything that's coming up in your calendar. And then you get a smaller version of the Bell Music Player widget. You get a scrolling RSS widget, which is the same size as your email and calendar agenda widgets, and that will be available for any RSS feed that you've added in Symbian Web. There's also visual bookmarks, which anyone who has used that feature on the MIMO-driven Nokia N900 will be familiar with. That's like a 2x1.5 block of the thumbnail of the site. You will also get a 3G on or off toggle, which will... If you're in a GPRS only area, you can save some battery power by stopping the phone searching for a 3G signal. You'll also get a Bluetooth on and off toggle widget, and if you didn't have it already, you'll have a VPN on or off toggle. However,
I knew there had to be a however.
Yeah, that's not where it ends. Some phones will actually get a whole slew of other widgets on top of those. There will be a notes widget, which will let you view and browse through all of the notes you've got saved in the Symbian Notes application. There will be a widget for the mobile data tracker application, which is actually built into the settings of Symbian Bell, but you can actually view on the home screen what your current usage is. There'll be a toggle for switching into silent mode, which is basically the silent profile. There's another toggle for going into offline mode. There's another one for switching mobile data off completely and back on. And then there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 different clocks. There's the big analog, there's a text clock, big mechanical clock, and a flip style clock. Now, whether or not you get those, we have not yet been able to spot a pattern. Lots of people have commented and left product codes. And even indeed in our own team, Steve's and eight got all of these.
Mine got the Bell Refresh, which includes most of these plus the other functions. Yeah. And I think you got which version of home screen widgets did you get?
I got the just the first set of widgets on my N8, but someone emailed into us with an N8 of exactly the same product code as mine, and he got the full set of home screen widgets. And that that theme has persisted. There hasn't really been any rhyme or reason as to who's getting Bell Refresh, who's getting the small set of widgets, or who's getting the big set of widgets. We have not been able to find a pattern in this, and we have been asking around and asking readers and asking people who should know, and there's been nothing. So we are very puzzled about this. But there was one way of light in the comments, but there was two people who said they did a hard reset on their phones, and after that they got the full set of home screen widgets. So it's both sets that I've gone through. However, I haven't tested this yet, so I can't guarantee it will work.
But it's always a good bet, though. I've always recommended if people are struggling with, say, a phone that's not working properly, or perhaps they've done an update and it hasn't quite delivered all the bits that we listed in the changelog, quite often, if they can bear the pain of reinstalling apps and resyncing data, it's actually a good idea to go back to Nokia Suite and hard reset the phone and completely relay the firmware from scratch. And if nothing else, you get a sort of faster, more efficient phone. And you may well, as you say, you may end up getting the whole set of widgets rather than just half of them.
Yeah, definitely. I always recommend to do that too.
Yeah, just to add some clarity to this, David's talking about an update here. This is for the older device, so it isn't related to the Bell Feature Pack 2 we were talking about earlier, and they just happened to come out at about the same time. Now, my sort of theory on this, and again, you know, it's nothing official, is you have to differentiate between a home screen application update, which doesn't affect the firmware, because it stays the same firmware version, and these Bell Refresh, Bell Feature Pack 1, etc., which are firmware updates, and they require quite often operator approval and go through a bit of extra testing, whereas these application updates don't need that kind of operator approval and don't necessarily go through so much testing, so it's easier to roll those out to devices. So I think a lot of the devices that didn't get Bell Refresh, you know, they weren't getting the operator approval, and it's not necessarily, you know, the operator have said no, it's just lack of interest from the operator, they haven't actually gone through. It's not always going to be the case, and you know, it's actually more complicated than that, and there's so many product codes that sometimes they get missed out or forgotten about, or there's just not enough of them to justify the resources to push out the update or something like that. In all of this talk of updates, it's probably going to be helpful to people if we clarify what all the various updates that there have been and should be available to your device. So I think start off with the fact that the naming scheme went from Nokia Anna, then Nokia Bell, then Nokia Bell Feature Pack 1, and then Nokia Bell Feature Pack 2. However, there was Nokia Bell Refresh, which effectively gave some of the functionality of Feature Pack 1 without actually being Feature Pack 1. Yeah, it's all a bit complicated. Bell Feature Pack 1 and Bell Feature Pack 2 are actually the equivalent of what was known as Carla and Donna. And then think about devices specifically, the N8, the C7, the C601, the E7, the E6, the X7, the Oro, and the 500. Kind of all the first generation devices, 500 slightly different, but we'll leave that for now. They all got the Nokia Bell, or started getting it in February of this year, and a lot of people have now upgraded to that. They then also subsequently, in some cases, as we said, got Bell Refresh as well. So then we move on to the second generation of devices, and they were obviously the Nokia 603, the 700, the 701, and the 808 PureView. And now, obviously, they shipped with Nokia Bell, and then they were then upgraded, in most cases, to Nokia Bell Feature Pack 1. And I think that's been fairly universal, we found.
Yeah.
And now there's Nokia Bell Feature Pack 2, and obviously that it's going to be available for all of those. At the moment, it isn't, because it's just been pulled. Each of those had various updates, and as I said, you know, the Bell Feature Pack 2 is kind of the last of the big updates for Symbian, and was kind of the refinement of what went before with Feature Pack 1 and with Bell. And then what we've just been talking about is the home screen application updates, which might better be called widgets update, and that was, as far as we know, available quite widely for some of the earlier devices, but not all of them. They'd got Bell Refresh, for example, but some of the Bell Refresh devices may be getting a similar update to get some of the extra widgets. And we've also had a couple of reports saying that this has been available for some of the other, some of the kind of last generation devices as well. But that's really not a major update in the same sense going from Feature Pack 1 to 2 or something like that. It's just about adding extra widgets. And so, you know, when you're deciding what to upgrade, generally I say, you know, a big firmware upgrade is worthwhile because it adds stability and performance. Widgets, it's kind of down to you. If there's one that you really want to use, upgrade it. Otherwise, leave it, especially on some devices where there's sort of more limited memory available. But hopefully, you know, that does give you a clearer picture of what is available or should be available for your particular device.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying the differences in the different types of updates. But and just to chime in on my experience, I've tested it on a very old Nokia N8, which only got the first set of widgets and hasn't had Bell refresh. And also, I'm the custodian of the All About Symbian Nokia 700, and which came out with Nokia Bell, and that got the full set of home screen widgets, but again hasn't had the Bell refresh update. And both of these devices are unlocked as well, so there isn't the operator approval factor going into those.
Yeah, I should probably clarify that quite often product codes are grouped together by region, which is why you tend to get them appearing for one region over another, and that can sometimes include both unlocked and operator locked devices, so they'll sometimes arrive together, which is why you'll get that pattern. In the past, it always used to be that the unlocked devices would kind of get updates before anything else, because it was easier to do with testing and the certification. But as kind of both product codes and devices proliferated, and also we've come to kind of more the end of the line, and there's a smaller team obviously working on these software updates, I suspect the batching of updates happens more and more, and indeed the product code gets, you know, kind of forgotten about. You know, in some cases, the product code may only have a few thousand devices on it. Usually it would be obviously a lot more than that. So it's easy to see how things fall through the gap. It's also very frustrating for the users concerned, and everyone has my sympathy, because you know, it's something, honestly, that should have been fixed a long time ago. And I guess it's kind of one of these, another one of these, if we're going back and doing things differently, would fix it the right way round. With all of these updates, I would say if you can get hold of them, it's generally worth installing. But as we've kind of suggested, it's not absolutely the end of the world if you can't get them. I'm reluctant to sort of be too defensive Nokia, because really I think they should have done a better job, but I guess we also have to be realistic about the resources available, given that this sort of end of line thing is starting to happen with Symbian and is going to have more of an impact as we go on as well.
Yeah, the big thing, yes, as you say, with updating your applications, things like getting the latest version of Nokia Maps, the latest Nokia Store client, etc., you can get a long way towards some of these updates. And if you then, as you say, add the home screen widgets as well, you're pretty much most of the way there. The big one for me is this Feature Pack 2 update with the new keyboard, because that's something that's been cried out for every Symbian user for the last 5 years. We want our virtual QWERTY keyboards to have multi-touch, exactly the same as the iPhone. We finally got it. So let's hope they can carry on rolling out this feature pack too, and then more and more people running the Symbian can use this new keyboard and give them feedback, because I think that's definitely worthwhile.
Agreed. This feature pack 2 update is actually significantly bigger, I would say, than feature pack 1 was, in terms of the improvements it makes to the devices. And you can kind of see why, that these are third generation or last generation devices, if you want, running on Symbian 3 here. They probably should have had this update a lot earlier, but because of the cuts that happened, it took longer to deliver them, which is why, you know, you didn't get them shipping with, say, Bell Feature Pack 2, you know, which does come back to the whole story, as if they'd been able to deliver any of these updates a couple of years earlier, you know, the story around Symbian may have been rather different in terms of how people perceived it. What I will say about the update I installed on the 701, it all happened over the air. I thought it all happened very smoothly. It was about, I think, 18 megabytes or so in size, no problems. I actually did it over Wi-Fi, but I know plenty of people did it over 3G as well without coming across any problems. And, you know, when it works, it works very well indeed. And compared to the Windows Phone world, where I've also been updating some device, having to plug into a PC and do a several hundred megabyte download, you know, very similar to what Symbian does if you're going through PC Suite. Now, there are times when Symbian still feels ahead of Windows Phone in delivering that kind of experience. That's actually something that's going to change in Windows Phone 8. And I hope Nokia will maybe look back at some of their history of delivering software updates for Symbian and take some of the lessons away in terms of making sure they deliver them in as clear a manner as possible to users, so people know what they're getting and when they can expect to get them. Might avoid some of the confusion and some of the complaints that we've seen over the years with Symbian devices, which are continuing indeed with this Feature Pack 2 update.
And talking of updates, one more small story. The Nokia Store update that came out last week, guys, version 3.30.018, only a minor version update, but it had this following message attached to it. Special gift coming soon. Update Nokia Store now and get a gift of premium apps as soon as as the collection or the gift is released. Check collections and look at the Nokia Store gift. Now, I've looked at Nokia Store gift on a newly reset device, and there's nothing so far, but they do clearly say coming soon. Rafe, have you any idea, any glimpse whatsoever of what they're trailing it? Is it, you know, an Angry Birds space or something exciting?
I doubt it's going to be that exciting. I suspect it will be one of the games that's already sitting in the catalogue somewhere, and that will be made available for free. But, you know, if no, you keep your fingers crossed and hope for something more exciting.
Okay. Now, my pimping the Nokia E6 communicator article seemed to go down fairly well. I was determined to do a thorough job, and hopefully I did. I think about 3,000 words or so. Rafe, you've been a long-time E6 user. It's very easy to dismiss the E6s, and as I have done myself on various other podcasts, as just good for messaging and email and PIM stuff, and really lousy for media, for example, and lousy for games. But I hope I showed in that article that you, with a bit of care, you can actually get a reasonably decent video watching experience by using, for example, using the Zoom function built into Symbian Video Player. And there are actually, if you look there, quite a decent selection of casual games to keep you occupied. So it really makes the E6 a slightly more powerful and a good all-round device than people might have thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical with these devices that if you know, give it a bit of love and attention, you can actually get it looking really quite nice indeed. Yeah. Now, really, it comes back to the idea that whenever you're, you know, building these devices, they're kind of a compromise between various different, you know, factors. And the E6 was one of these devices that was weighted far more towards messaging and maybe enterprise use in general. The consumer features were still there under the hood. They just kind of took a back seat. But there are some, you know, physical characteristics of the device that make it, you know, less suited maybe for consuming multimedia, and partly that's about the funny screen resolution, or rather the odd one out amongst all the Symbian devices, but also it's a smaller physical screen size, and it's kind of, the whole device is engineered towards using it in a hybrid mode, you know, combination of touchscreen and the keyboard. So people, you know, might not always realize that you know, if you, you know, effectively dig down a bit, you can actually get a pretty competent device. And actually the same applied to the predecessor devices, the E61, 71 and the 72. So that kind of did bring it back to me reading through your article, and so all the comments as well. People obviously quite fond of the E6, and yeah, it still has a soft spot for me as well. I haven't used it in a while, I have to admit, and I've kind of moved on to other devices. But it does. I think it really brings home this idea that when you're creating a smartphone, you know, you do have competing compromises, and you can't build the ideal device for everybody simply because everyone's got, you know, slightly different requirements. And one of the things we have seen in the last, you know, few years is trend towards just a single form factor. You know, obviously that's the touch slab, and I think we've kind of lost something because of that. You know, by creating devices in different form factors, you kind of engineer into the very nature of them that they are suited for different tasks, whereas now you're moving more towards having a device that are designed around one particular form factor and one particular set of tasks. And so it's, you know, it is harder to differentiate the device, and you know, some ways you can get around that by, you know, 808, good example, sticking a good camera on it, but it's basically still a touch slab device with a big hump on the back for the camera. So I don't know, I would maybe like to see a bit more innovation in form factors come back. But I guess it's also a reflection of the fact that some of these compromises have become less because the software has become more powerful. You know, the on-screen keyboard is, I guess, a good example of this. We've just been talking about how much better it is in Bell Feature Pack 2. Anyone who's used, you know, Android or Windows Phone or an iPhone will know that they, you know, for most people, an on-screen keyboard they can get on pretty well with, get up to some quite high input speed, something that just wasn't possible before, whether it was capacitive screens or even the, you know, the resistive screens didn't allow that fast text input, which is why some people prefer keys. And there are still people out there who still want to have physical keys. I would tend to say to them, try out an on-screen keyboard, because they have come a long way in the last few years, or certainly the last 5 years anyway. But even so, reading through this, you know, sort of, it caused me to look again with a fond eye at the E6, which I guess I'm probably doing too much these days.
Yeah, also worth noting, if you have got an E6 out there and listening to this, and there's a separate flow item I did on my trip to Nokia CarePoint. If you've always bemoaned the fact that you can never actually see the notification LED behind the D-pad on the E6, because basically it's covered with a D-pad, Nokia, I think Nokia realized their design mistake quite early on. If you go to any Nokia CarePoint and say, I can't see my notification LED, they will say, oh yes, we recognize this fault on day one, week one. There's a brand new D-pad. We'll fit it for you free of charge. And they did it for me, and it makes a huge, huge difference. So do see my flow item with the photos, and you'll basically see what I mean. Let's move on to supersizing a smartphone. Now, this is a feature that David wrote. Can you care to summarize your premise, David, and then Rafe and I can disagree with you or agree.
Okay. My premise is that a lot of phones are just getting too big to hold in my hand, and that the defining feature of what a phone is rather than another class of device is a device that can be operated in one hand. And that devices that need operating with two hands and tasks that need doing with two hands are essentially a different class of device. It's a different type of experience. The phone is a very distinct experience that you can just, you see, it's this little device that you can hold in one hand and just glance at what's going on in your life and what people want you to know, and just tapping out little bits of information just to contact loved ones or to let colleagues know that you're on the way somewhere. And a lot of the time you're busy doing something else. You're either helping your child along, or you're holding shopping bags, or you're holding the rail on the tube, and your phone is in the other hand. And there are many, many phones now that are getting larger than one hand can reasonably deal with. And I define that as basically, can your phone cover the whole screen to actually operate the device? So I was quite disturbed with the trend of the new Lumia devices that were both larger than the Lumia 800, although Rafe has reliably informed me that the Lumia 820 is more or less feel the same in my hand as the 800. But it is just this trend, because, I mean, for example, there's the Galaxy Note 2, which I've been looking at this weekend, and that's a 5.5-inch screen, and it does have options to use it with one hand. It's got options to like cramp the on-screen keyboard up to one side so you can use it, but it's a precarious proposition, because I think a lot of the time you have for these much larger phones, you have to just loosely perch it on the top of your little finger, while the rest of your fingers just delicately just balance it at the back while you're tapping away at the thumb, and one false move and the thing is gone.
Yeah, I've got the Galaxy Note 2 coming in for review tomorrow, so I shall experience all these pleasures, no doubt. But I just watching all the different tutorial videos that Samsung have put up, and it's very, very clear that 95%, maybe even 99% of a person's use of the Galaxy Note 2 will be two-handed. And I guess that's an extreme example, but it really does make your point, yes. Absolutely. Rafe, what did you think of David's article, and where would you draw the line?
I think this is a really interesting discussion point. I mean, I personally feel that the pressure to have bigger screens has come from the changing use case of the smartphone themselves. You know, as they become more about content consumption now, be that video or web browsing or something else, you know, the pressure to have a bigger screen has increased, because frankly, the more screen space you have, the easier it gets to do those sort of things. And as they become more important, that's been enough of a factor to sort of outweigh the convenience of single-handed usage. I would still personally say I like to be able to use a device one-handed. And obviously, it's going to depend on how big your hands are, where the sweet spot is. But generally, it's around the 4-inch size that it starts becoming difficult to reach, you know, the entire screen with your thumb or with a finger. And as soon as you go over that, it becomes a two-handed device. Now, obviously, there are some variations around this, how close you can get the screen bezel. But, a kind of good example here is the Nokia Lumia 800 and the 900. And actually, I'd say even something like Nokia 701 and the 808. The 808's on the boundary of being a two-handed device. And the same applies to 800 and 900. And as David said, there was a lot of comment around the 920 and the 820, you know, being bigger. And actually, it seems to be that all the flagships now are getting to 4.5 inches and above. I would like to see a flagship that was, you know, down around the, you know, 3.9 inches, maybe even a little bit less than that. You know, Apple for a long time was doing that with the iPhone. They've now increased that, making it not impossible, but harder to get everything from a single-handed user point of view. Is it an entirely bad thing? Well, I guess it depends what you use your smartphone for, because I was actually using a phone the other day thinking about this. A lot of the stuff that you do want to do one-handed, you can still do, and that, you know, things like answering calls, maybe replying to a text message. So I think there's actually some, you know, capabilities to think about here. How do you design different scenarios on the phone, and some of the platforms are better suited to this than others. You know, Symbian, for example, is actually quite good because a lot of it is, you know, down the bottom on the toolbar. You do a lot of the things from there. The same actually applies largely to Windows Phone and to an extent Android as well. Apple, it can be more problematic because they quite often think at both the top and the bottom of the screen that you need to get at. So I think this is a debate that will continue. You know, a lot of it is kind of about the spec wars. You know, you want to have the biggest possible screen. That's seen as better. But there is definitely a strong market for those who want a device that's maybe, you know, fits in the pocket a bit more easily, is one-handed to use. So, you know, I read this editorial with interest, and there's a whole load of comments, and actually we cross-posted this on both sites, and it's pretty clear there is demand for people who want something, you know, as I say, in the size of maybe the 701 or maybe the Lumia 800 in the next kind of generation of devices. They don't want something huge. It's not, you know, that I'm saying get rid of all the big screen devices. I think people need to have the choice. And it kind of makes me wonder whether there's a kind of, at the moment, you're seeing Apple do a really interesting thing with storage sizes. You know, you get the 8 gigabyte, the 16 gigabyte, the 32 gigabyte version. And that's been repeated by some other manufacturers. And then we're seeing colors as well, so you can get it in different colors. I wonder, you know, is it going to be economical or is it going to make business sense to have the same device, essentially, but at different screen sizes? Or does that become a different model number then? You know, how do you best sell those and how do you manage the inventory? Because that's what it's about. I mean, anytime you make a variant on a device, it becomes a bit trickier to get the sales volumes and the manufacturing levels right. And that's why there's been a tendency in recent years to go to just having, you know, a fewer number of flagship devices rather than a big broad portfolio. But I wonder whether there's enough consumer demand to actually make it worthwhile for manufacturers to offer, you know, that extra option. It's not just about color or storage size. It should also be about the actual physical size of the device itself.
Yeah, David, I think Rafe made your exact conclusion from your article about 2 minutes ago when he said, yes, absolutely, we want a flagship device which is smaller. So the flagship doesn't necessarily mean bigger.
And I don't know if you remember this bit of the article, Riff, but I think great minds think alike here, because that was actually the conclusion that I came to at the end of the article. I was saying, let's not just market things in different colours, let's market things in different sizes, because there's nothing wrong with big devices. Big devices are great if you've got a certain use case in mind, or you've got huge hands. But that's just as valid as someone with smaller hands who wants something to fit as well. So it's basically, is it economically viable for all of the OEMs to start tending towards the made-to-measure as well, and say, well, here's the big... you can have it in red, blue, or yellow, and you can have it in small or large. And it is an interesting question of, would that be economically viable? There is also the question of, like, how well does the user interface scale, because the pixel density would change, and because to keep things simple for developers, I would think you would keep the screen resolution the same. But I think within a certain range of screen sizes, you could probably get away with just things being a slightly different size, like, for example, Symbian running on from the N8 to the 808, or Windows Phone running from the Lumia 800 to the 900.
Yeah, I think certainly with the HD resolutions you're getting on the modern devices now, pixel density isn't going to be too much of an issue. I mean, I think the other thing that's interesting about this is it's also tablets having an effect on the phone market. We've had the so-called phablet, I think it is, with the 5 inches and above. But actually, if you own a tablet, I think you may be inclined to have a smaller, more pocketable phone because you've got that bigger screen, but still mobile experience with you on the tablet. And especially when we talking about 7-inch tablets and then 10-inch tablets. So it kind of depends how a device is going to fit into your existing collection of devices. And of course, you know, in the same way that laptops and smartphones had that before, you know, I know some people were replacing smartphones with the kind of communicators from the Symbian era, but it does strike me that there's still room for this kind of smartphone, you know, with a smaller screen. And, you know, Symbian did this very successfully early on. I was just sort of thinking back in history. I think one of the smallest screens I can remember is on the Nokia 5500 Sport, which I believe was 31 millimeters by 31 millimeters. It was a square screen, if I recall correctly. Yeah. And that's, you know, thinking about a screen that's just 3 centimeters by 3 centimeters now for a modern smartphone. I'm not advocating going back to quite that size. Actually, I think the way to do that would be with kind of wearable computing and having maybe a wristwatch with a secondary screen and things like that. And I think there's a lot of interesting potential there. But of course, all of this screen debate is kind of a little bit waiting around for technology to catch up, and be it foldable screens or whatever else. And, you know, there are these beam phones out there. Samsung have done a pretty good job, I think, with the Android. I think it's the, Galaxy Beam, for example, and there's other technology, but there is still something about having it all in just, you know, a single device. I think this, you know, move towards bigger screens will probably have a little bit of, you know, feedback the other way this year, as people going, no, I want something that I can use and easily fit into one hand. Because it's also about the comfort when you're holding it in one hand, you know, when you're holding it up to your ear, it's a lot more comfortable holding a screen. And generally, the, you know, it always used to be that 65 millimeters across was kind of considered the barrier between, you know, one hand and two-handed use, and also being comfortable to hold for the majority of people. And so all of this does depend on your hand size. But this is one that I think needs quite careful thinking about, because there are several factors involved. And David, as I was suggesting, UI being one of those. It also depends on actually how you put the phone together, because some phones feel wider than they are or thinner than they are. You know, so, for example, putting the rounded edges on the devices, which Nokia have done quite a lot of in the past, rather than kind of the blocky edge approach that's, you know, been used before, that actually makes it feel a little bit thinner. And that's, you know, a deliberate design decision. Talking to the designers involved, you know, they do that because it does fit into the hand more comfortably. But it is, does come back to this thing of screen real estate. As you're doing more with the phone, it becomes more comfortable to be able to have a big screen. It's not just about the amount you can fit on the screen, it's about, you know, the comfort with which you can view it and the time which you might be looking at the screen, because it's obviously a lot more comfortable to look at a 5-inch screen for 3 hours than it is to look at a 3-inch screen for 5 hours.
Yeah, I think we'll call a halt to the conversation there, guys. It's been fascinating. I guess the lesson I've learned here is if we introduce a topic of conversation around the size of people's phones, we can easily fill an hour's worth of chat. But let's save the rest for next week's podcast. Thank you very much to David Gilson for being on.
Thank you very much, Steve. And thank you to everybody for listening and subscribing.
And thank you to Rafe.
Indeed. Thanks, everyone, for listening. It's always good to get your feedback messages. I've had a couple in the last week, so I want to say a particular thank you to anyone who's sent in some feedback in the last few weeks. We really enjoy getting it. And if you have got any, either, you know, let us know through Twitter or Facebook, or you can email me, rafe@allaboutsymbian.com. We're always looking for interesting topics of discussion, or if people want some questions answered, or just want us, you know, to answer some questions on some vaguely Symbian-related topic, we'll be happy to oblige.
Yeah. And a last word from me. If you've been wondering why the YouTube client or downloader or access method on your Symbian smartphone has not been working, it's because YouTube changed something in their APIs. But don't worry, just go into the Nokia store. Gravity's had an update for its YouTube module. QTube's got an update. YouTube Downloader Pro, whatever it's called, that's also been updated. So update, 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 and you should be browsing YouTube and watching again very happily. Thank you very much for listening. This has been All About Symbian Insight. We'll catch you next time. Bye for now.